You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
One of the many issues that we haven't yet had time on this platform to get our teeth into, because there's just too much for us to cut through. And my philosophy is do what you do as well as possible in terms of the quality of the discussion that we are facilitating and engaging in, rather than having FOMO about a million and one issues. But I think it's actually high time that you and I resort back to a very important debate in terms of what is inflammatory, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, and how to deal with political speech or speech in general that can be incredibly, not just divisive, but quite frankly, incitement to violence as well. And this raises the question of Andile Mkhithama. And of course, many of you will know that during a rally in Potchefstroom in the Northwest on Saturday, he had threatened to kill 5 white people for every black person killed. So there's a couple of issues here that I want to raise. I've got some very clear views on them, on one or two of them. Some of them I don't have a clear view on. And I want to invite you to be in conversation with me about it. I'm not an absolutist when it comes to free speech. I think that even if you are committed as a liberal to the value of free speech, that speech can be constrained. Firstly, in our law, we recognize that certain kinds of speech is not protected speech. Incitement to violence is not protected. It is unlawful. Similarly, hate speech is not acceptable, which is why there are all sorts of remedies in our law for hate speech to be nipped in the bud. And we've seen examples of that kind in the last year or so. So I think we already recognize in our constitution that even though free speech in general is an important value and is conducive to making sure that you and I have the best possible chance publicly to eliminate falsehoods and to promote that which is truthful, that speech can be constrained. We don't live in a society where we are absolutist about the value of free speech. We're not libertarians about it. And so it's not a case of anything goes. And I think it's quite interesting because one of the illusions that come with social media is that the gold standard of being committed to free speech is that you have to be tolerating any tweet or any Facebook status update, which is why some of you catch feelings when people block you, even though many of you who get blocked also block other people. But the reason why you think you can be a victim when you tweet hate speech and someone blocks you is that we have this warped idea that I think the arrival of technology and social media has instilled in us, that somehow we have to be absolutist about speech. But actually, no. There's no reason why we should be. You can be genuinely committed to a political and social discourse where everyone has an opportunity to articulate their viewpoint, their experiences, where we debate, where we agree, disagree deeply. And you can still say, here are the acceptable democratic ethical constraints on what you can say, even in a society that is deeply committed to the value of free speech in general. So as you see, CBS, I'm not an absolutist about free speech. And I don't believe that the case for absolute free speech is compelling. So let's firstly discuss that. But then there's the specific case of Andile Mkhithama as a case study on this particular issue. What is the best way to deal with speech of this nature? And there's an easy part to this conversation, and then there's a difficult part. The easy part is that if the law is broken, then the guy should be arrested. I mean, that's quite simple. If there's incitement here to kill people, then obviously that is something that the law enforcement agencies should have a look at. And for me, that's completely unambiguous. That doesn't mean that we are becoming intolerant of difference as a society. It means that we nip in the bud criminality. But here's the question that I think is a bit more tricky. And on this one, I honestly don't have a view. And I wonder whether you do. From the point of view of political contestation, what is the best way to deal with this kind of character? Do you allow him to have a political party and let him contest and let you and I as voters say no? And by not voting for him, you and I have an opportunity to demonstrate that we're not interested as black and white people, as poor and rich people, as people who live in townships, in the suburbs, in the rural areas, in the cities, that we say no by actively choosing to not support such a political party and let him suffer the embarrassment of getting negligible votes in the national election? Or do you think that our electoral laws should be such that a character of this kind shouldn't even be allowed to register a political party? And that I'm not sure about how to deal with, because there's a balance to be struck here. So on the one hand, I don't think absolute free speech is a good principle in a society. On the other hand, I also have an instinctive discomfort with certain kinds of political rights being constrained, including someone who wants to form a political party on the basis of the kinds of viewpoints that Mhlatshama actually holds. So what is the best way in society to deal with that? Do we say the laws in terms of hate speech and in terms of incitement or violence, there is an adequate way to deal with this? Because I think that's adequate. Or do we say, in addition to that, the IEC should be empowered to be able to say, nope, you can't register a political party. Or, okay, you've registered a political party, but these are the conditions that you've signed up for in terms of a code of conduct. Having violated that code of conduct with the evidence before us, we now say that you can actually be deregistered as a political party. And those are issues we need to separate, and I wonder how you see them. Why don't we get into that? 011-883-0702. Let's have that debate in Joburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And it is an open line. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. You and I had a chat yesterday about the EFF and Julius Malema specifically. And this morning when I opened my Facebook and I saw the BLF and the things I had to say, I thought to myself, you know, this is another little dovetail exactly into that. Dangerous, dangerous speech by people serving their own political ends and means. You know, I'm quite shocked by what Andile, I can't pronounce his surname, unfortunately. But it was quite shocking. I saw about 7 or 8 reshares on Facebook and people that were deeply disturbed, clearly, by what he had to say.
What is the best way to deal with that as a society, do you think, Wayne?
I think I agree with your views that it is somewhat problematic to say, let's just censor all of them. You know, it's a dangerous precedent, you know, setting that kind of thing. But on the other end of it, clearly we can't allow people like the BLF to say the things that they do say. And I think you should be criminally prosecuted for it. Forget the South African Human Rights Commission and all those kind of things and just put aside the IEC for a minute. I think criminal charges should be laid against him. And he should be criminally investigated. And if he's found criminally guilty, he can't serve as an elected member of parliament or a political party. He must go to jail for it. And I think that is the way we should deal with it. Instead of going to the... Look, if a political party as a whole is found to be guilty of hate speech, then they should be charged in a similar way and treated in the same way as criminals. Let's treat it as that. Going and fighting a political battle and saying to the IEC, well, they're not allowed to have a voice, that's also a dangerous precedent.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I've got similar issues about these various options. Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Eusebius.
Cheers. Stephen, how do you see the issues?
Hi, how are you, Eusebius?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Good. Look, I think Andile's speech was taken out of context by the media.
Okay, explain to us.
The guy did not just make a speech and say he's going to kill every 5 white people or for 1 black person killed. I think he was making a statement based on what Johan Rupert has said about being friends with the taxi bosses, that for 1 person, for 1 black person killed, it's going to be equivalent with the BLF will kill 5. So I think the media here is just trying to push...
Hold on, leave the media aside. It's everyone's favorite pastime is to bash the media. Rather do what you set out to do, which I think is productive, Stephen. Give us your understanding of the sequence of events. So Johan Rupert speaks. I assume you're referring to his interview with Given Kara.
Yes.
Okay, then what happens next? Then there's a rally by the BLF in Potchefstroom. Now explain to me, this is an honest question. I'm not even trying to catch you out. So what is the context of the remarks? Just give it to me, because I'd love to know under what circumstances the context defense can help this guy out.
No, because Andile was saying that if a black person is killed by white people, the BLF will have 5 white people killed. It was in defense of what Johan Rupert said about being friends with the taxi bosses and all those things. And another thing that I'm going to say is that there are people who are inciting violence, having YouTube channels, groups like the Said Lenders, who are training for civil wars, posting on YouTube, inciting serious violence against black people. but nothing is being said. Nothing is. I'm sure that half of the people don't even know what's happening, that there are white groups who are preparing for civil war in South Africa. But the media is not reporting any of those things. But now Andile comes in defense of black people. Now it's a whole issue now. He must be arrested. He must be criminalized.
Nah, Stephen, I'm not convinced at all. Firstly, Andile is not coming in my defense. He's simply being inflammatory. My life is not under threat here from white people. But secondly, I don't understand this whataboutery tactic. We've spoken about it on the show before. Now, I can't stop you from using bad arguments, but I will point it out when you do so. If there are white minority groups that exist somewhere on the fringes of society that are also busy inciting violence, plotting against the state, then we should find them. But a defense of Mxitama can't be on the basis of, oh, but what about other people who do the same kind of thing? I mean, that kind of logic is neither here nor there. What next? Next, you're going to defend Pule Mabe by saying, but what about other men? The what about argument is an argument that you should think twice about using.
No, I hear you, and you're correct, and I agree with you based on that, but we cannot be biased and say because it's the BLF now we have to, they have to be criminally charged. My question is, what about the other groups as well?
Yeah, we'll come for them next, but today we're talking about Mxitama. Can we stick to the subject at hand? This consistency argument is a pathetic defense of anyone who does wrong. And next you're going to say you can't go for Zuma until you've gone for some dead white guy who was corrupt in 1652. I mean, the consistency argument isn't irrelevant because a just society must be consistent, but it's also a piss-poor defense of someone who does something wrong to say unless and until every person who've done similar wrong gets rounded up, then we should not respond and engage this particular individual where there's a clear-cut case.
Okay, no, thanks, you see, guys. I hear your point.
Yeah, I hear you too, Stephen, but I think the best thing to do is actually to play the man's own words, because the other thing you said that really leaves me confused, and I'm genuinely open to persuasion, is the classic taken out of context defense. So you hear the words of the guy. I wasn't at the rally. I didn't follow it because Andile lost me at the point at which, quite frankly, he became, on the face of it, captured himself. I found him an interesting contrarian 10 years ago, but a good 3, 4, 5 years ago, I think he started losing credibility. I don't think he was an honest proponent of the content of his own viewpoints. There came a turn when he started, frankly, doing the bidding of Jacob Zuma. At that point, I thought he's no longer the interesting contrarian he used to be in our discourse 10, 15 years ago. So I didn't follow him closely. If there is a context offense, a sophisticated one to be made, you're welcome to have a go at it. But I think Abel has found the actual audio. Let's have a listen to this.
For each one person that is being killed by the taxi industry, we get 5 white people. For every one black person who killed, we get 5 white people. You kill one of us, we get 5 of you. You kill one of us, we get 5.
I'm sorry. That is nothing less than absolute demagoguery. There's nothing more to it. I can't see how anyone can defend that. You can hate Johann Rupert. You can hate white monopoly capital. You can hate the fact that in 2018, the legacy of colonialism and apartheid remains visible in so many ways in our social fabric, in our economy, in all sorts of institutionalized forms of racism. But how on earth is there a defense of that kind of speech? I mean, what does that defense look like? It just doesn't make sense. And Mxitama doesn't speak on behalf of me as a black person. Thulani, does he speak on your behalf? How's it, Thulani?
Hi. No, he doesn't speak on my behalf at all. And the other thing, you know, what this country needs is that everybody should work towards improving the economy, towards taking the country forward. Such speeches just take us kilometers, thousands of kilometers backwards. We need Indians, we need white people, we need black people. To put shoulder to the wheel to take this country forward. This rubbish that Mxitama and then is pouring out is just taking us nowhere. In fact, it's taking us backwards. So he's not talking in my name at all. My opinion is that they should allow him to register as a party and just give him a long rope to hang himself, because you will see how ridiculously he does in the elections.
Okay, that's an interesting view. So you think that our political processes should not bar that kind of person from running for office, and we should rather let the marketplace demonstrate to him that actually there's no market for that kind of politics?
There's no market for that kind of rubbish.
Okay, interesting take, Tulani. Themba, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Themba.
I'm good. There was this song, the struggle song, that was sung during the 80s. It says, Oza, Oza, Uzo wona mabhunu, Oza, ANC, Uzo wona mabhunu, Athathe ilizwe lethu. Do you get my point? Yeah. Those days are gone, you know. We are living in the new era. Understand, it's 2018, so we can't go back to the era of 70s and 80s. It was tough. And I'm sure Kutama, he was not even around. He was not even yet born when tear gas, they will shoot tear gas around Soweto in townships. Hey, you won't walk around, understand? Bullets were flying around. When Azazi, Mama Zinzi, we're fighting with Soweto students, Soweto students. It was tough those days. When police vans were all over township shootings randomly, yeah, it was not nice, I understand. Then people like in Kritama and Julius Malem, who were not even around, they were not even around those days. They come in the name of democracy and abuse it, I understand. They were not around.
Okay, interesting view from Themba. How do you see the issues? Is there someone who's sympathetic? 011-883-0702 in Joburg, and in Cape Town, 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
25 minutes before 10 o'clock, if you've just joined us, we're in the middle of a tough but necessary open line discussion in terms of inflammatory speech, political speech in general. How best do we respond to that? Do we nip it in the bud with the use of criminal law? Is that a bad way to deal with it? Are you an absolutist about free speech yourself? Or do you think that there are legitimate legal and moral constraints, even in a liberal democracy, when it comes to what you can actually say? And beyond that, in terms of political rights, should you be deregistered as a political party if you are the leader of a political party or a registered political outfit? And you find yourself making speech that, quite frankly, is racially deeply divided. And who decides and what is the standard? So a cluster of really complicated but necessary questions. And this particular discussion, of course, is prompted by remarks made by Andile Tlitama during a rally in Potchefstroom. I played that a little bit earlier. A very weird, weird set of remarks about wanting to kill 5 white people every black person that gets killed. And I say weird in part because obviously this guy, being cunning, the language he uses is very careful. In a sense, these are hypothetical remarks rather than straightforward incitement. But nevertheless, I think that they are unacceptable remarks. The more complex question is, what are the range of ways that we should and should not respond to that kind of political speech? JC, good morning.
Morning.
Speak to me.
Hi, okay. My opinion on that matter is that, as far as I know, inciting violence is against the constitutional rights or against the Constitution. Your mandate as a political party is to uphold the Constitution. So if you violate the Constitution, you should not be allowed to hold a post as a political member or have a political party.
Okay, so for you it's straightforward. It's illegal, and therefore you shouldn't be allowed to even be a political party leader.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting take. Thanks, JC. Karen, how do you see it?
Hi there. Yeah, I agree with the previous sister. It's a very simple matter. We don't even have to discuss the second point. He committed a crime, and he should be arrested and obviously not put into the parliament. Why should one person who commits a crime be put in jail and nothing happens to him?
Part of the problem on the crime question, I think the crime question is a little bit tricky. Like I just said, Andile is extremely intelligent. It's part of the reason why I used to follow him since I was a student. His statement, in a sense, and I'd have to listen to the full context, which is why I'm very careful here. But what I've heard is enough to just make me furious. But obviously, he's using very hypothetical language here.
Yeah.
And he's doing so deliberately because the hypothetical form is an interesting way to try and get yourself out of legal trouble, potentially. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but yes, I do know what you mean, but I don't think that should be allowed. I mean, he's trying to be clever and be sly about it, but he's still saying what he's saying, and he's influencing a lot of people who think they're going to get a house from somebody if they take it away, and he's taking advantage of those people.
Okay, interesting take. Luanda, do you think there's something to be said in terms of generosity in support of Andile, or even if one doesn't support him, to hear him differently? Luanda, are you there?
Hi, CBS. Morning. I saw Andile's interview just, I think, 2 days back, and he was speaking about his upbringing in the farms, and how he saw black people being still enslaved from that. Because when I heard this, I just wanted to understand Angela as a person first.
Yes.
So I think that is, as we have seen in the recent developments, a lot of people are quite angry because there's these things that happen and are not necessarily in the spotlight.
Mm.
And as much as we think, I've heard certain sentiments that say that people are just blindly being influenced. But if you look at it, it takes certain elements of truth to follow someone like this. So if then he's speaking on behalf of the black people that were killed in farms, then those people will understand and be in support of this. So they'll feel he is with them. Similar case with the ESF when they speak about white arrogance. So any black person that has experienced that, as much as if you look at their policies and how they go about their general behavior, people fail to understand why they have a following. But if there's any element of truth and there's people that have been in such situations, then the sentiment speaks to them, and that's why he'll have supporters. So I think, but I'm also like you, I haven't really seen the entire context of the speech, but just getting from this part, it just made me look at who Andile is as a person, and I think it was coming from that point.
Okay, interesting take. Paul, good morning to you.
Hi, you see me this? Andile didn't actually say he was going to kill five white people. He said he was going to kill five white people if a white person killed a black person. So technically, if white people don't kill black people, Andile won't do anything. So
I know, but here's the thing, right? But you also have to be very clear about the implications of the hypothetical form. I wonder whether, forget the law, let's talk straightforwardly about social and political discourse and language. I wonder whether the hypothetical form and the conditional form of the statement let someone off the hook. If I'm a homophobe and I take to the podium and I say, I'm not saying we must kill gay people, but I'm saying if a gay man were to do A, B, C, and D, under those circumstances, let's kill them. Amandla! Well, I haven't directly said let's go and kill gay people, but let's be clear that I'm being mischievous in a way that's very deliberate. So I'm trying to get out of any legal difficulty by using the conditional statement in the English language. But is that really what I'm doing? I'm performing homophobia in that moment.
No, for sure. But now the thing is with Andile, he's obviously taking advice. He didn't just make that speech up. I mean, he probably took legal advice. How far can I push this? You know, courts-wise, he didn't just make this up off his cuff. I'm not convinced of that. But anyway, I think he's just being ignored. I don't think he should be prosecuted. And I think if you did prosecute him, you turn him into a martyr, and somebody else will pop up and say the same thing. So just ignore the guy, treat him with the contempt he deserves.
I'm interested in that latter viewpoint more than the former. I don't think he took advice. I think the guy now shoots from the hip. Pardon the pun. But your second viewpoint is the one that I think is really, really interesting. Just talk me through that, Paul. Some people say if you ignore him, he's going to fester, and that's bad. Can you articulate to people who hold that view why ignoring him is also possibly a good tactic?
Well, because you've got to have some faith in the human race. And as I said to you previously, there's only a very small percentage of people who think like he does.
Hmm.
So, and as long as that small percentage of people who are absolutely radically left remain a small percentage, they will do it if they don't get pressed.
Okay.
But if you get of Hitler, he got pressed, a lot of it. So, ignore him, literally. mean, it's just you're gonna make this whole thing into a Sunday Times front page. You're gonna get more support.
It's an interesting take. Thanks, Paul. So Paul says, do not oxygenate him. Do you agree with that? Is that the best way to deal with problematic speech in general? Smatsadza, good morning.
Good morning, Elizabeth. I just think that the reaction to Andile's talk is just sensationalist, and it's blown out of proportion. Because, you know, with white people, what happened with your likes of Baron Stradom, they didn't talk like Andile. They didn't talk like Andile today, if this happens, we'll kill blacks. They simply got fed up with blacks, and he went into the streets and shot black people, and he's walking freely today. Now we want to make a big meal about somebody who's just speaking to entertain himself and to have himself in the airwaves, and today I'm sure he's the happiest man because he's all over the media, but I think we're being sensationalist in trying to be politically correct and all that stuff. There's no, it's really much ado about nothing, really.
There's a couple of things you've got to separate out. The one question is whether it's dangerous. And I take your view. It's a view, Smatsadza, to say the guy's not dangerous. It's just a teddy bear who wants attention. Ignore him. But the bit where, and maybe it's just a language difference between you and me, I think characterizing people's concern as sensationalist is not appropriate, because the content of his speech, even if he doesn't have real power, the content of his speech is unacceptable. It's grossly unacceptable, and he's not some fringe character in our political and social landscape. Maybe he should be, but he isn't. So deconstructing the content of his speech, I don't think, is a sign of being sensationalist.
Well, I hear that. All I'm saying that, When Baron Stradom shot at black people, I mean, I was adult enough at that time. I didn't hear this big, the reaction was not as big as it is now, you know. And he's walking freely in the streets. Yet people are talking about Andile being thrown into jail. You want to make him a martyr all of a sudden. It's not necessary, really.
Okay. Well, we agree on some things. We agree on other things. I really, as a black person, 39 years old in the year 2018, I'm sorry, Smatsadza, but I'm not going to take my cue for what is acceptable from the behavior of the likes of Baron Stradom. If those guys are our yardstick, then we will never build a society that is different to the one that we left behind in 1994.
Eusebius?
I'm all ears, and I'm listening very closely.
We're not taking a cue, and we're not using a Baron Stradom. I'm comparing the reactions, not the actions of people. We're not saying the Baron Stradoms are our yardstick. We're saying the reaction from the population to what he did and the reaction to what Andile has said is much different. That's what I'm saying.
There is a difference, and I don't misunderstand you. I understand you perfectly clearly. I'm disagreeing with you. And I'm telling you the basis of my disagreement is the way white people responded to the likes of Baron Stradom collectively was unacceptable. So the way in which people responded to apartheid monsters is also not my yardstick for how we should respond to certain kinds of speech during peaceful times. I'm not interested in whether or not white people responded appropriately to white people that did wrong things during apartheid. I set my own standards for what counts as decency in the year 2018, including in relation to speech.
Point taken, Eusebio. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, sir. Have a beautiful day.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line. 11 minutes before 10 o'clock. TJ, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, Eusebio. How are you doing?
I'm extremely well. How are you?
I'm good. I would like to comment on the Andile case.
Yes, what are your reflections?
First of all, I think Andile must pay or must come to law for whatever he did and he said. So he must pay for whatever he said. But on the other bigger picture, Andile was responding to a threat that was made by Rupert on national TV to say that, don't do nothing, I will. I've got the people. I've got the means. And no one is looking at it in that sense because of what Andile said.
Okay, hold on for me. What did Rupert say that constituted a threat?
But when he's basically letting us know that, you know, he knows toxic bosses. So he's telling people that I know Inkabi.
Okay.
So I feel like Anila, yes, was responding to that, but Anila must pay for what he did. But we must also look at it also in that bigger picture of Anila is responding to a threat, which we all knew that if you make a threat, people will respond to a threat.
Okay, but let's say he was responding to a threat. There are responsible ways of responding to a threat, and then there are ways of responding to a threat that are as irresponsible as the threat itself. Would you characterize Andile's response to the alleged Johann Rupert threat as an acceptable, a productive, and a healthy response?
No, which is where I'm very disappointed in him, because he's very intelligent. He should have used this spot to do it in a way where we could actually now talk about it properly. But now he's made it in a way where it's now taken out of context of what was actually being tackled. Now it's now, you know, who wants to kill who and who wants to kill who, instead of actually saying, wait, Rupert, what do you actually mean by, you know, Texas guys? Is that a threat? What kind of a threat are you saying?
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think there's a tragedy here. I really used to like Andile Mkhlitama in terms of where he fit into our society long before it was fashionable to be a radical leftist, long before the Follis movements were even conceived on our campuses. He occupied an interesting position as Black Consciousness political-based parties declined electorally. He was that one voice as a commentator in places like the Mail and Guardian, the Frank Talk essay series that he used to publish, where I think he really occupied an important role. And I think beyond this conversation, if we were to do the deconstruction of Andile Mkhlitama, for me, one of the tragedies is that at some point he moved from being an honest contrarian with an interesting political ideological conviction and an interesting and necessary minority positioning within our discourse, and something went wrong. Something went wrong, and I think it's somewhere in the last 4 or 5 years. And I struggle to take him as seriously as I used to take him as a writer and as a thinker 10, 15 years ago.
No, but the other thing is, you must remember that in South Africa, we have leaders. If you look at the political parties, there's only senior leaders. There's a lot of senior leaders which fought in the struggle, which was very important. Don't get me wrong. But we are moving into a new world now where we need to be thinkers. We need leaders that are thinkers, leaders that are going to influence everyone, the black, the white, Indians, that even when you are at home, do not act this way and then come in public and give me that big smile. But what? Because Andile should have taken this opportunity to actually show us a new type of leadership.
Yeah, I agree with you, TJ. A very sober take on the matter. Thanks, TJ. Have a beautiful day. Mzoli.
Hello, Yusubias.
Hello, Mzoli. How do you see the issues?
Okay, I think Andile is just trying, to stay relevant, especially in the media. And I think by having this discussion, we are only just playing into his hands. But I do believe that this is the kind of conversation we ought to have. However, I also want to mention that he seems to draw a lot of inspiration from the Nation of Islam in the U.S. because he likes to quote Malcolm X, Louis Farrakhan, which are leaders of the Nation of Islam. In fact, Malcolm X was. Now, there's another leader which is not very well known in that group. It's called Khalid Abdul Muhammad. He was the one who spoke about the South African situation, and he said that black people in South Africa ought to do exactly what Andile is advocating. He said, kill the children, kill the women, kill many people, white, referring to white people, of course. So he said,
it's not literally what Andile said, but I understand why you want to draw that comparison. What insight should we gain from that comparison, Mzoli?
No, what I'm trying to say is he seems to draw inspiration from possibly wrong sources. And he should be very careful in his rhetoric, because the Black American struggle is somewhat different from our struggle. Even in the manner we approach our own struggle is different. And the kinds of things that we can say, we shouldn't just copy wholesale what the Americans are saying and think that we can utter make those same pronunciations in our context. Ours is a very fragile case. We need to tread very carefully.
Okay, interesting. Thanks, Mzoli. Thanks for your contribution there. Much appreciated. Tobile, good morning.
Good morning, you said this. Just going back to your point earlier, I get it is in Andy's intelligent, and he did have a point to say. But I think personally that people have got lost with the politics.
Okay, Tobile, the line's not holding, I'm afraid. I'd love to have you on, but we can't hear you clearly. Alan, thank you so much for your patience. What do you want to say?
Yes, certainly. I believe in the freedom of speech and the sacrosanctity of freedom of speech, and I think Andile should be able to say what he wants to say. If his opinions are radical enough, that he will be marginalized, and hopefully the political party he belongs to will censor him in some form of way if they don't like what he says. If they don't, then it's indicated of the political party belongs to, of their attitude and their opinion. So I certainly believe that he should be allowed to say what he wants to say.
Regardless of whether it constitutes potentially hate speech, regardless of whether it's inflammatory, or do you think that if the law has been broken, the law should go after him? Or should we change the law to allow everyone absolute free speech?
Look, I do believe that there is some such thing as hateful speech, but who's the arbitrator of what constitutes hateful or hate speech? And the people that we're going to elect to select that is most probably going to be the wrong people. So I'd rather let people say what they want to say. They will be censored and sanctioned by the political parties that they're members of and by the society they're in and the employers they belong to, whatever.
It's an interesting viewpoint, Alan. Obviously, our law doesn't quite work like that. Do you think our law should be even more elastic in terms of allowing all kinds of speech?
I think it should be more elastic in allowing people to say what they want to say.
How would you feel if I went to a podium right now and I said, kill all people called Alan?
I would draw the line at incitement to violence.
Well, there you go. So you do have a line that you want to draw. It's a question of where you draw it then. So who decides? Yeah. You've answered your own question.
Who decides? It's a very difficult question. And incitement to violence is the borderline that I'd like to draw.
Okay. I hear you. Thank you, Alan. Have a beautiful day. Mark, you've been holding on, our final caller for the day. Thanks so much. What's on your mind?
You actually put it very well with the last caller. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's a criminal charge. And if you incite violence, I mean, remember the outcry that came out when Gareth Cliff said, some people just don't understand free speech. I mean, he was castigated and hauled over the barrel for that. Penny Sparrow talks about animals on the beach, and she gets 150,000 rand fine. The other lady, Vicky Momberg, talks about the K word, obviously, and she sits in jail. And this guy actually talks about murder in whatever context and whatever provocation. People always use provocation as a reason. It doesn't excuse anything. And he should be just be allowed to speak. There seems to be a distinct double standard here. And, you either go after people that talk about the wrong thing or you don't go after people then. If Andile is allowed to speak whatever he's allowed to speak, then Vicky Momberg must be released tomorrow from jail and Penny Sparrow must be given the money back. That's basically what I was
saying. Okay, interesting take. Another fascinating open line. Thank you so much for your participation in it. And, the issues are complex. I don't necessarily want to persuade you to change your viewpoint, but I think that's the way to frame it. There's a question here around whether speech should be absolute. I personally think it shouldn't be. I think there are legitimate, even in a liberal democracy, moral and legal constraints on acceptable speech. It's hard to know where to draw the line. I think at the very least, we can all concur that incitement to violence is a minimum threshold. What's interesting is when you have demagoguery and you have people who are very good at speechcraft who can use their language very carefully to make sure that they don't fall foul of the law in terms of the letter of the law, but maybe in the spirit of the law. So when you use conditional statements, for example, that's really, really interesting. And then we have to critique people socially and politically, even if we don't chuck them in jail.